Big day coming up, Veterans Day, yeah?
Yes.
Big day for me anyways, and I think it's a time where we all reflect, those of us particularly who have been in the service before, of our military careers, what we did, where we were, who we met. And I'm fortunate enough to have two veterans here that work side by side at LGT, Michael Standring, Director of Training, Karina Frails, Log Auditor. Both of which were in the Air Force. And I think I'm going to start with Michael.
Right.
Okay. So when did you go into the service?
I joined the service in September of 96. I actually was in delayed enlistment for almost a year. It was December 95. So I was like just turned 16. I joined when I was 17. And yeah.
Wow. I didn't think you could join at 17.
Yes, I think my parents had to sign for me, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
And what made you want to join the military?
Well, it's a funny story. I actually had transferred to a technical trading school in high school my senior year because I figured I needed to figure out how to do something for my future, so I was doing carpentry. I did that for a few weeks and then realized I was 4 years behind everybody, so... I had transferred back to my school that I did the other 3 years in, and then I had to give them a reason why I decided to put them through all that trouble to get me to go to this tech school as a senior. And I told them, well, I'm joining the military, so that's why it's not going to matter what, I don't need to learn a trade, I'll learn whatever they teach me. And mm-hmm. And then I told my dad, asked me what happened, and I told him that story, and he said, are you really going to join the military? And I was like, no. I was like, that was just what I had to do to get out of that situation. And then before you know it, a recruiter came to our high school, Air Force recruiter, and I met up with him, and the rest is history.
Wow. Do you remember where you went to basic?
Yes, I went to basic in San Antonio back in September 96. And then many years later, I ended up working there for 3 years.
So just out of curiosity, because I know how it was for me, were you surprised when you got to basic?
I was probably in shock the whole time. You know, I turned 18 in basic training. I definitely did not let anybody know that my birthday was coming and going. But yeah, there was a lot of people that were older, had apartments, you know, kids, families, and I just came straight from high school living with my folks, you know, never done laundry in my life. And I just was kind of shocked and overwhelmed the whole time. And I didn't think it was too difficult, especially not physically, because I just graduated high school. So
yeah.
Where old, some of the older folks might have had a little more difficulty.
how long was basic? 6 weeks?
I think it was 6 weeks, yes. I know, I think it's eight now, but it was six when I went through.
Yeah?
Yes.
And so then, did you decide what you wanted to do while you were in basic, or did you sign up for something before you left?
Another interesting one. So when I met when I met with my recruiter, and he had me take the ASVAB test and said, when I came back and met with him, he said, yeah, you qualify for any job in the military that you want. And I said, okay, well, I want a medical job. And he was like, okay, well, do you care which one? I was like, not really, but I care more about when I enter. I wanted to go in September after all my friends were going back to school or college, then I would leave. So I told him, I just care more about the date. So I got September 25th. And then when I got to basic training and the day came around when they were talking about jobs and people like, what are you? I'm like, I'm medical. And they're like, what do you mean? What do you do? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And people are like, I'm a cop, I'm a firefighter, I'm EOD. And I'm like, how do you know specifically what you are already? And like, well, I came in with a guaranteed job. And I'm like, oh, man. And that's when it hit me. And I was like, I don't have a guaranteed job. So then they give you a list of jobs that are available. Mm-hmm. And I just remember there was security forces. They needed like 63 people. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to be a cop. And then there were two medical jobs. It was like medical admin and public health. and they only needed like a couple people for each. And I put public health number one, and that's what I ended up getting. So I felt very lucky.
Wow. Okay, Karina, your turn.
Yes.
How old were you when you decided to go into the military?
I was 18.
Okay.
And the guy I was dating in high school was in ROTC, Air Force ROTC. And it kind of influenced my decision because he was going to go to college in ROTC. So I was like, oh, well, maybe the Air Force is the right choice. I left a month after graduating high school to go to basic. So it was like right away I left. So.
And so did you know anything about what you were getting into, or were you just...
I just did not want to stay at home. And I didn't... I just wanted to go travel and see what I could see. So, no, I had no idea what I was getting into.
Okay. And did you go to the same place, Lackland?
I did, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when you got there, was it what you were expecting?
No. As Mike said, I was also in shock. It was lots of yelling, lots of just lots of push-ups. I remember lots of push-ups and yeah. shining boots and... learning how to fold a shirt with tweezers.
And did you have a guaranteed position?
That's also interesting. When I went to MEPS, where you go for all the medical examinations and everything, I was going to sign up for actually jet engine mechanic. I thought that would be super interesting and really fun, and I would fly all over or go wherever. But the girl who went into the office to sign up before me, right before me, took the last open spot for that job. I had to pick something else. So they showed me, based on my ASVAB scores, I could pretty much do anything. But for my date I wanted to leave, it was intelligence positions. I said, well, I guess I'm not meant to be a jet engine mechanic. Why don't I just do intelligence, signals analysis? And it sounded cool because I learned Morse code. And I said, well, let's do that.
Wow. And so that's what you did.
That is exactly what I did. Yes.
So you knew going into basic.
I did know.
What yes. you were going to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so my turn. I'm sitting in my AP calculus class in high school. And my dad was a college professor. And everything that my dad said was, you know, you're going to go to CSUN. You know, I teach there. You know, it's not going to cost anything. And I kept saying to myself, no, no, no. I don't want to stay at home either. So I'm sitting in my algebra class or calculus class, and there's this guy in front of me. His name's Anarj Frangos. So I'll never forget it. His brother was at the Air Force Academy. And he was leafing through a catalog, and I said, what is that? And then this other friend of mine, Debbie Todd, sitting right next to Anarj, and she's telling me all about this place, the Air Force Academy, that you can go and get this free education, right? It's free, she said, it's free. And I said, okay. And I took it home to my dad, and my dad was so excited because he's an ex-Marine. And I applied, but you had to get a congressman's nomination to the academy, and I had just missed the cutoff. And I still called them, and they let me submit it late. And so Congressman Barry Goldwater Jr. from the state of California gave me my nomination, and I went to the Air Force Academy for basic training. Yeah, but I did not know also what it was going to be like. And so the next question I'm going to ask you guys is, when you got to basic, one of the things my dad told me, and which I didn't listen to, was you need to break in your boots, right? You need to wear them before you get there, right? Some people even put them on and they get them wet, so they form to their feet. I didn't listen, and in the first week, they walked us everywhere. And those boots and those core frames, if you remember the plastic shoes, are rubbing on the back of my feet. And on come the blisters. And they bled. They were so bad. So, do you remember your first boots?
Yes, I still have my first boots in my garage. the black leather boots. And they still have a shine on them, actually.
So, yeah?
Yeah, I also got the blisters.
Okay.
Lots of those. We marched so much marching everywhere. Yes. So.
Yeah. Did you put them on and get them wet?
I did not either. No. Okay. I knew about it, but I had so little time from when I knew I was going to leave. I didn't. I just showed up and started getting blisters.
Michael?
Pretty much the same for me. I thought that I got my boots when I got to basic training. I do recall, though, that they were very rigid and getting lots of blisters right around the top of the front, kind of where it creases when you step.
Yeah.
I recall that. I don't know if I still have them. I know I have at least one pair, and I've got some desert boots, but I'm sure you did too.
So, spit shining. Did you spit shine your boots?
I literally spit shined my boots, yes, with spits and black shoe polish, and got it kind of looking like glass.
Did you turn them on fire?
Not in basic training. I remember doing that afterwards, yeah. But I feel like it might have helped. You know, I tried it sometimes, but
yeah. How about you?
In tech school is when I did most of my shining. But we would strip them, and then we would put the polish on them. But we used some sort of glass cleaning spray or something. I can't remember, but it made it super shiny after you put the polish on. Mm-hmm. It's been a while, so I don't exactly remember. But I remember my boots were very shiny.
Yeah.
That was my favorite thing to do in basic. I would shine other people's boots so I didn't have to do the bathroom duty. Yeah. I hated cleaning the bathroom. But I would shine boots.
So. Wow. Mm-hmm. So you traded.
I did. Yeah. We didn't tell anybody, but I did.
Yeah. Did either one of you go to survival school? No?
No.
Survival? No, not SEER, but we did have a warrior week kind of thing.
So what was that about?
Well, we had to go in the big tents out in the middle of the woods or wherever it was in Texas, and we had to carry a dummy M16 and practice, weapon, all I can think of the word is etiquette. And we had to learn how to dig a foxhole. We actually did that and had the sandbags and practiced people approaching and all the different kind of wartime things you might experience if you had to do that. So it was interesting. We did obstacle course, climbing ropes and going under the barbed wire like you see in movies. So it was kind of fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was 18. Yeah. So I wouldn't do that now. Yeah.
I got offered to go to survival school. By that time, I was about 32. And I did not have anything to prove. I was like, heck no. No way. I got two back-to-back bases, Mildenhall, England, and then Cannon in New Mexico, where I was assigned to special ops units. And so when I was in England, it was a special position. I had to apply for it to get it. And so it wasn't a requirement, but they said I could go if I wanted to. It was optional. I was like, no, I have nothing to prove. If I was young, right out of, basic or tech school, but by that time I was, I'd been in at least, I'd been in 14 years, I think, at that point. So,
Let's talk about your first base. So where did you go first, Michael?
So when I was at tech school, once you get close to graduating is when they give you your assignment. And so me being from Massachusetts, I wanted to be on the East Coast somewhere. I got my assignment and it was Mississippi, Keesler Air Force Base, Mississippi. Being from the Northeast, I didn't think Mississippi was a good spot for me. Had a very strong accent back then. And anyway, there was another guy in our class that was going there too. And so I ended up trading with someone that got Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. And I figured if I can't be on the East Coast, I'd rather be somewhere cool. So traded for Vegas. And the day I graduated, they kept messing up our paperwork. At one point, I was going to be going to Missouri because we did a three-way swap and the paperwork got messed up. But I was like, you better put it back to Mississippi because I'd rather go with the other guy or go to Vegas. I don't want it in Missouri. And then the other two got... They were like, yeah, we're okay with ours. I'm like, no, I'm not okay with the one I got out of the three of us. Put it back or give me Vegas. And then like the day before we graduated, they gave us our papers, and it said, I literally didn't know until the day before, and it said Vegas. And I was like, oh, my, thank God.
So Vegas was your first
Vegas,
one?
Yes.
And your first job?
Public health. So I got, that's what I got at basic training. My tech school was right down the street at Brooks Air Force Base. It was like 15 minutes away. So I did, I think it was 3 months there, and then went to Nellis to do public health. I was there for almost 7 years.
And what is public health? What do you do on base?
So you work in the hospital. We did everything from educating people that got STIs, like diseases, communicable diseases, to we did all the food inspections on base, or anywhere you could possibly eat, any of the daycare facilities. We had occupational health, so we reviewed every occupational shop that was on the base, industrial shops, PPE, their hazmat type stuff. We did all the hearing tests, so anyone on base that had to get a hearing test, they came to us. We had the booths that you'd sit in there and do that. So it was a lot of different sections within public health that you would rotate through.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Karina?
My first base was Fort Meade, Maryland, so it was an Army base.
Oh, you went where Michael wanted to go.
Yep, on the East Coast. because I was intelligence, and the home base for intelligence is NSA in Maryland, the National Security Agency. So I worked there. That was my first job, doing signals analysis. So intercepting radio signals, and I did the board patching with all the cords and all that kind of stuff.
Were you listening?
Listening, and then on a very old computer system, you pull up visual, like the visual of the signal, and you had to break out what it was and different. I had to learn all kinds of just different kinds of signals, what they look like, how to break them out, different kinds of platforms of airplanes and kinds of stuff. So yeah.
Huh. So what did they do with all that stuff, do you know, just out of curiosity?
I'm not really 100% sure what I can share about what my job did anymore, so
okay.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. My first job was Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi. I went to comm school. And we learned, I don't know, all different types of communication systems, satellites and trailing wire antennas for you listening. And so that's where I went. I didn't want to go there. Hmm. I wanted to go. And when we got there, that was really the comm school. And after that is when we got our permanent assignments. I signed up for Osan Air Force Base, Korea, and I got off at Air Force Base, Nebraska. And I said, they don't even start with the same letter. I don't. Oh, they do. Maybe Osan and Offutt. They start with the same. Maybe that's what the.
Only seven. Yeah.
I didn't even know where Offutt was. So that was a shock to me. But it was a great assignment, actually. I don't know if your memories are the same, but when I got to Offutt, it was so big. It was the headquarters of Strategic Air Command, and there were a lot of us second lieutenants there. And it was just, this is probably one of the best times, you know, as far as, you know, you all move to this base where nobody has established friendships or nobody has families and all you have is each other, and you build lifelong friendships with the people that you serve with. So isn't that what you guys felt the same?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Once you get into the first base, and again, not having a spouse or any kids, you know, you're living in the dorms. So, I mean, you're living with all the people. They try to make the dorm set up too, so it's your squadron. So like my dorm was the medical dorm. So it's all people that you see every day, work with every day. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. You stay in contact all the time, right?
I still come across some of their names once in a while. Just it's insane ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like, it's not even like a high school or a college. I mean, it's where you, you know, you depend on each other to get the job done, but you also depend on each other socially and emotionally, and it was just a good group. Let's talk about our commanding officers. Let's spend a few minutes. Do you remember, was there one in particular that sticks out?
Good or bad?
Let's try good first. Let's try, or something that you learned the most from.
You'd have to go first. I have to think about it.
You want me to go?
Yeah.
I'll go.
You kick it off.
I don't remember his name. What I do remember is, you know, as a second lieutenant, I was always frustrated with the bureaucracy of the military. And I was always frustrated with everybody gets promoted the same. Everybody's a second lieutenant for 2 years. Everybody's a first lieutenant for 2 years. Everybody's a major for four, you know. And so, you know, you could work really hard and the person right next to you wouldn't. And I used to complain to my commanding officer about the inequities, I think, sometimes of the military. And I remember one day I was sitting in his office and he said, Pam, sometimes just getting the job done is enough.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I didn't like those words. But, you know, there's a lot of truth to that, right? There's a lot of truth to getting the mission done, right? That's the most important thing. It's not sometimes how well you do the mission or how poorly you do it, but if you got it done, right, then you got it done. And it's just that was a really hard thing for me to learn, but it's served me well through the years. How about you, Michael?
So I would say that two commanders stand out to me that I worked for that I really enjoyed. So as I think you both know, I was a first sergeant for 3 years. And so, you know, I was a first sergeant at basic training at Lackland. So what I experienced now, I was with the command, me and the commander. And so those commanders, they were missileers. And so they're the commanders of the basic training units. So their career paths was they could go through training or recruiting. So three years in a row, you know, I had a lieutenant colonel for a year, then a new one. So I had three different ones. So the first two, I really enjoyed, you know. I guess I came from the medical world, right? So you have to think about your commanders. They might be great doctors or dentists or optometrists, but it doesn't mean they're going to be a good commander, you know. So when you have medical people that they've been in so long, like you're saying, the time limits, you know, before you know it, they're colonels. And now they're like, I just want to, you know, see patients all day. I don't want to, you know, lead all these people. And a lot of them don't have like the social skill, like they're just not trained or ready for it. And so to me, it was very difficult to work with medical commanders that just were not mm-hmm. really fit. Whereas the missile air guys, they were more, they knew the real Air Force, you know, they knew the, and plus it's basic training. So it's all about training and they come from the flight line side. So two different worlds. So, and then of course I, you know, just feeling like you had an important job and you were appreciated, you know, when they left and, you know, just hearing the words from them and, you know, realizing how much you actually did during that time frame for them and being like, I never even really thought of anything except just doing my job every day, you know? So,
yeah.
So I really just, I enjoyed my time with the first two. The third one, not so much. He, I won't say anything bad about him, but okay. He wasn't like the other guys. He's more of a pushover, which made things difficult in that environment.
Yeah.
Well, I had lots of commanders. I've been to a lot of bases. So I don't recall one specific that was the best, but I had someone a little lower in the chain of command that I remember more, and I still talk to him on social media because we're close like that. But he was my operations floor like supervisor. He was a major maybe, and he was prior enlisted, and then he became an officer. So he had a totally different attitude about everything. So it was kind of like he taught me about working as a team because he saw both sides of the world. the enlisted and the officer world are completely different. But that's sort of what I remember learning from him. We had linguists, we had analysts, we had Morse code, all the signals people, and we all did different jobs, but we all had to get the mission done together. And so he kind of held that together. It was really awesome. He's a cool guy.
So, yeah, it's awesome. What about any particular memories that stand out? Something that happened while you were serving? Any particular event? Let me just throw one out there, and you guys can think about this. I was on the Airborne Command Post, and I was a missile launch officer on the Airborne Command Post. And so for those of you that are in the military before, you know what DEFCON is. We were airborne, and they call them EAMs, Emergency Action Message, and we would get those periodically, and you would have to crack open the codes to decipher the message, and we get the message, and the DEFCON's increasing. And back then, I'm going to date myself, the wall was still up, right? And the Soviet Union was the Soviet Union, and Cuba was Cuba. And so then we get another message, and it's another DEFCON level. And I think at that point, you know, I'm this young second lieutenant who's been to missile launch school, and I know I'm loading the codes, and I know I can fire and launch the entire Minuteman force from the air. And I'm thinking to myself, shit, I could really do this, right? And it's just one of those moments where you you really think about what your mission is, and the fact that you know, at one point in time you could be responding to a nuclear threat, and it kind of hit me. Eventually, you know, we got to DEFCON 4, and then something happened and it dissipated. But we loaded the codes while we were in the air. We were ready to turn that key, and it was just impactful. I think most people think, oh, you serve in the military. Well, you know, what did you do, right? And a lot of times, you know, people say, well, if Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, but they don't realize a lot of times even people in the support roles get to be have those types of situations where they have to think about the impact that they could have with their actions on other people. So I'll turn it over to Corinne that's leaning over.
Mm-hmm. I have a memory that's similar to yours. When I was stationed in Alaska, it's well known that Russia does shows of force on Alaska. They would fly their big planes over Alaskan airspace. There was an incident, and I was the only person in the world following this incident, doing the job that I had to do. The only person in the world catching this event. And I think that was amazing. And there was even a picture in the newspaper of the airplane and one of our planes following it. And I always felt like that was my silent claim to fame, since I can't really say what I was doing. But that they even used that event in a worldwide exercise that they practiced doing that I went to Virginia to help with. So that was kind of my cool memory.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So,
Michael?
I can't think of anything impressive like those two stories. but the one thing that just kind of stands out to me is that I was just like, oh my gosh, what am I doing or where am I right now? Was my first deployment. So I was at Nellis. I was still 18, so still young. It was literally a Saturday, and I'm in the dorms, and my supervisor came by and was like, you need to go to work right now. And I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, yes, we're gathering everybody up. And I'm like, for what? And he's like, you'll find out when we get there. Meet at the logistics warehouse. And I'm like, oh, that ain't a good sign. So we all met there, and I was part of the decon team, decontamination team. So I'm like, what? You know, and they're like, we're going to be deploying. We're leaving within the day, you know, next day. And I'm like, what? Whoa, we are, like, you know, it was just shocking, you know, to just be like, well, where are we going? It's like, we'll find out like later.
Yeah, when you get there.
When you get there, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. It was just kind of like, you know, just to be 18 and, you know, you have a dorm and cable TV and your phone bill and a girlfriend. And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm leaving tomorrow. I don't know, you know, how long I'll be gone or where I'm even going. And we just started packing up our gear. And I think by Monday morning, we flew out of there, military aircraft, and went to, gosh, Holloman in New Mexico and picked up basically the rest of a clinic, a full clinic. And ended up going to Kuwait for about 4.5 months. We just showed up on this base, Al Jaber, Kuwait, and there was just a desert there. I mean, we literally built a hospital from the ground up, you know, just 110 degree weather. And yeah, just built it right there thinking that we're about to go to war. So we're building this hospital, and we had all the services there ready to go. We had our decon team all ready to do that job, you know, and course we never did that. So like the 4 months we kind of just did a lot of like training or trying to do stuff within our fields, you know. There was already people that, there was already a public health guy there at that base, you know, so now all of a sudden there's like six of us, so, you know, trying to just stay busy. But I just remember at night, you know, you're sleeping in a tent and you're just like, the flight line there, the planes or jets are taking off like 100 feet from your head, and it just screaming, and you're just like, where am I? Like, how did I end up here in the middle of this desert, you know, just like baking out here? And I just remember too, you could like look as far, you know, so far away, and you would see like these oil fields where the tops were burning, you know, constantly. So you would just see these like little fires everywhere, like so far away. And then as soon as you would leave the base, there'd be like destroyed tanks and stuff, and just where that, you know, when Kuwait was liberated, you know. Yeah. So
But the point of it is, right, when you're in the military, when they say go, you go.
You go, yeah.
You don't think about it. You just say, okay, that's my job. And
grab your bags.
Know. Yeah, yeah, grab your bags, you're leaving, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember your first paycheck and how much you got paid? Was it anything at all?
You're not going to believe this when I tell you this.
Okay, let's hear it.
When I joined and I met the recruiter and all that and went through that process, you know, part of the reason I did that is because I did not want to go to college. I felt like I did not like school. I didn't feel like it didn't make sense that I'm going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to go do something that I just don't want to do. And I didn't have the kind of money, you know, we definitely did not have the money in my family. So when I heard that I could go in the Air Force and they're like, oh, we feed you and, you know, you go to work and you know, we're going to give you all your uniforms. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. I literally didn't know we were getting paid. You have to.
Well, you thought you were rolling in the dough then.
You have to remember, like, again, I was like 17. I never really had, you know, a job or a bank account or anything. And when I'm thinking, they told me I'm going to be living in dorms and, so, I mean, I'm at basic training. I'm thinking I get fed 3 times a day. I got my uniforms. I've got my dorm. Mm-hmm. And so when people started talking about, like, pay and stuff, and I was like, basically, like, what's that? What are we? Are you serious? And then back then it was, like, the actual paycheck, you know? So I just remember getting the first one. I'm like, I didn't even want to ask people, like, how often do we get these? Or, like, oh, my God, you know?
Once a month.
I think it was once a month then. Yeah, it was once a month then.
Once a month.
And then I think when you got to your first base, you could change it to twice, I think. But anyway, I just remember going through basic training, just having all the cash like in my little drawer, thinking like you couldn't really spend it on anything anyway, except like polish, shoe polish or whatever, because they gave you everything. Why do you need a paycheck? You know? And so I remember me being young and dumb. I got to tech school. And I started, they make you get a little mailbox. And I was building up these paychecks. And so I just had all the cash. And then one day I just put it in an envelope and I sent it home to my mom. And so like the next time I talked to her, I'm like, hey, mom. She's like, Michael. And I'm like, what? She's like, what did you do? You sent me this envelope. And I'm like, yeah, that's like all my paycheck. She's like, you cannot send like that much cash in an envelope. Are you crazy? And I was like, I don't know what to do with it. I'm like, I don't have a bank account or anything. They just, you know, they basically make you go cash it at the BX. And you basically every paycheck, I would take it, like buy like a pack of pencils. And then they give you the rest in cash. And then I just, yeah, I remember doing that and her being like, what are you thinking? And then once I got to Nellis, my first base, Vegas, my first supervisor was like, there's a bank over here on base. You have to go there and set up an account and then your money will go to that every month. And I'm like, okay, all right. But yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, Karina, can you top that?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember. And I think my first paycheck was only $500. Mm-hmm. It wasn't very much, but to me, it was a lot. I had previous like retail positions when I was in high school, which also didn't make very much. But $500 felt like, oh my gosh, I'm actually going to make money. I think after I made the next rank really quickly at tech school, because I had signed for 6 years. And so I got a guaranteed rank after I got there. And so then I think it went up to 1,000 or something like, I can't remember, but I think it still was once a month. Then, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, those numbers seem right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I thought, wow, you know, are they going to pay me? And, because, you know, I was going to have to pay to go to college. And when I went to the academy, they paid me. Not a lot, enough to go to the BX or PX or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you didn't have any expenses. I think that was a big difference. But what I did notice when I got on my first base, that it's never enough for those young kids with families. And so it was great for young kids that, you know, are just graduating high school and they're on their own and they don't have to support anybody. But those that didn't, it was really a struggle. That's what I remember. Both of you have left the military, and so I have two questions remaining. The first one is, when you got out, how was the transition? So, Karina, we'll start with you first this time.
Okay. Well, I was in for a little over 8 years. I was medically discharged, so I guess that's a little different than retiring, because it was only 8 years and not 20. Or more, but it still was a difficult transition going from a very regimented, you don't have to pick out your outfit every day, you don't have to decide how your hair is supposed to be, everything is set out for you. And then you get out and it's like, what do I wear to work every day? How do I do my hair? You know, little things like that, that's a transition. But then you go to a job, I went back to retail for a while after I got out, and there's like no rules. I didn't know what to do. I was so used to the structure. And so I kind of floundered for a little bit, honestly, not knowing what to do until I decided to go to school, go to college. But it was kind of a hard transition for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How about you, Michael?
So I retired in 2018. I did 22 years. Transition for me was actually pretty easy, just because I really wanted to get out. I was done. I had worked for like back to back really, really bad commanders. I mean, I could have definitely stayed in and become an E9 for sure. I was way ahead of my times. I mean, I made rank pretty easily. I was known by my career field. Like they were, when I told, they actually asked me like, you know, what are your plans? Because I had done 3 years at this special ops base. And so they were looking to, I can't remember the word, like vet me or something to higher positions. And that's when I told them I'm getting out. And they were just like, what? You know, I think I was, you know, known enough in the career field where I was kind of like, oh my God, now what? You know? But again, I just could not, I couldn't do it anymore. And we were living in Clovis, New Mexico. And so, you know, my wife being a nurse and this base is out in the middle of nowhere. So we just knew life would get better just being able to get away from all of that, you know, and being able to live somewhere we wanted to live, and she can actually get a job. And and then, of course, you know, as soon as you retire, you're getting VA disability and retirement pay. So we actually had all of our stuff in storage for like almost 2 years after we retired. And we were living here in Nebraska with her family, and I literally was doing nothing. I was just watching TV every single day. Seriously. But, you know, then, you know, the transition, though, was it was everything I pictured, which was getting away from that base and that Clovis, New Mexico, and then being close to family for the first time, and, you know, us being our decision to be where we want to be. And then our plan was to always settle down in Massachusetts, where I'm from, and buy a house. So I went there over Christmas break, you know, and found a brand new house that was just about done being built. And it was we had all of our stuff moved from storage after 2 years into that brand new house and around family and everything. So it was, everything had kind of gone the way I hoped it would be, you know. And the times that I felt like I really should get a job and whatnot, I found jobs. You know, I worked at the Naval before I moved here. I worked in a Navy clinic for like a year and a half, and I would have stayed there. You know, I'm a committed person. So once I'm planted, you know, I'm not really going to get comfortable. But yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think that, because when you're in the military, you don't think it's ever going to end, right? You just think it's going to be, you're going to, you know, make a career of it. And you're not worried about whether you're going to have a job tomorrow, because you're going to have a job. So you're just going to go wherever they tell you to go. And it's almost like a lot of the decisions that you have to make are taken care of for you. And then when you get out, it's not. And there comes the worry of, you know, not having a job, getting laid off, you know. But I think what I miss the most is I miss the camaraderie. And, you know, business is good, you know, and this is a really tight company. And there's a lot of people here that feel this is a family. And I think in a lot of ways it is, but it's still not the same as when you're in the service. And so I miss that. I still miss it today. You ready for my last question?
I was just going to add one thing too, real quick, that I thought, you know, I remember at my going away, you know, retirement, I didn't have a retirement grad, you know, party or anything like that, but basically my last commander's call, you know, and the commander said, this is his last one. And, you know, he's going to be next week, he's gone. And it shocked everybody that nobody knew. I wanted it to be like quiet. And I would have rather just kind of disappeared in the night. But but you're after like he that, said
though.
That, huh?
You're like that though.
I'm very much like that. Yes. But I just remember after he said that, and then after the commander's call, everyone was coming up and shaking my hand. And I remember seeing a couple people that were crying, you know, and I they were specifically one girl that I went through some serious stuff. And I was just like, what's wrong? You know, but it just will always be burnt into my mind, feeling like, man, you just have such an impact on people that you'll never even know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I miss the people. I miss the camaraderie too.
Yeah.
I really do.
One thing, that is always standing out for me with the people that are in the military is how you feel about yourself and your service. And I think to the man or woman, I've yet to meet somebody who wasn't proud of having served. And I'll never forget at the academy, we have graduation, and my parents had come. And they have an award ceremony, and I had been getting an award, and we're in the auditorium, and all these cadets are in there, and all their parents are in there. And before they start handing out the awards, they ask anybody in the audience that's a Medal of Honor recipient to stand up.
Oh, man.
And the whole auditorium is silent. Right? Everybody was talking up to that point, instantaneous silence. And there were two people that stood up, and everyone just gave them the standing ovation and recognition. And it's that thing, right, that nobody knows until you're in, right, of how you feel the pride you feel of having served, the pride you feel for one another. You know, there's nothing really like it. And so I guess I'm going to ask you, are you proud of what you did?
Very proud. I will be honest, I struggled a bit for a few years, being open and honest that, oh yes, I'm a veteran. It's kind of hard to identify as that when you're a spouse of an active duty member, because everybody thinks your spouse is the only person who's in the military. So I kind of was in the shadows. I never deployed to Afghanistan or Iraq like most of my friends and my husband. So I felt kind of left out. And every time I'd meet a stranger, if I was in uniform or out now, they would say, oh, did you deploy? Where did you go? What did you do? And I was like, oh, I'd have to say, no, I didn't deploy. So I kind of felt left out for a while. I had a revelation a few years back when I realized, you know what, I should be proud because I did do stuff. Might have been behind the scenes and I can't talk about it and it's silent. We call ourselves the silent warriors. But yeah, I am proud now because I realized that I had an impact on the world, on some of the things that I did. So yeah, I am.
So I guess I could say I have pride as far as, like I said, the people that I helped. Like it sounds very cliche, but just the few times in your career where you'd get an email out of the middle of nowhere and, you know, someone's like, guess what? You know, I was the honor graduate of my class, or I did this and it's because of you. And you gave me that talk that time and you're like, I don't even remember you, you know, or they're like, you were the best supervisor. And so when you, one in particular, this girl, I remember her, I basically had to like really chew her out in my office with her supervisor. We were all E7s, but I was a first sergeant and basically, you know, ripped into her and she was being so unprofessional. And when she left, I was like, I don't care what she thinks of me, because that had to be done, you know? And then like, she was an E6 and she made E7 and like sent an email to like five people. And I was one of them saying like, you changed my career, you know, da da da. And I was like, oh my God, I would think you hated me, you know? Like, so I had a lot of pride with being able to help people. And when I got to San Antonio, brand new first sergeant, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I got dropped off in a basic training squadron. You know, I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. There's troops everywhere. And this MTI came to me and he's like, hey, I'm in the Air National Guard. And so I'm not getting paid right now. Da, 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 da. And so I don't know what to do. And I was like, well, what's going to get you by? You know, what do you need? And he said, you know, a few $100, whatever. And so I'm like, well, let me see what I can do. And I had no idea what I can do, you know? So I called a couple other first sergeants. I was like, this guy's like hurting for money. You know, he's guard. So he was actually like a truck driver. So I'm like, he's a truck driver. And so he's not driving right now because he has to be here. He was on his like 2 weeks. I'm like, he's like basically telling me he's eating ramen, you know? And so they gave me a check. It was a grant for $500. You know, and so I was like, so a grant, that means he can just keep it. And they're like, yeah, he doesn't have to pay it back. And I was just like, damn. I was like, all right, cool. And so I went through all the process to get it and stuff. And I brought him in my office. I had it under my keyboard. And I was like, hey, I talked to the first sergeant council and, you know, we're able to help you out a little. We have funds set aside for things like this. And I was like, make sure that goes to good use or whatever. And he was just so grateful and thankful. And I was just like, hey, no problem. You know, he walked away and it felt so good to be able to do that for him. To me, the really cool part of the story was he came back like 2 days later. He knocked on my door and I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, oh, I just wanted to, can I come in? And I said, yeah. And he had like a little plaque behind him that he had made. And it was like, thank you, First Sergeant Standring, whatever. And he's like, I had this made. And I'm like, and I looked at it, I said, why'd you spend money on this? I'm like, why'd you do that? He's like, sir, he's like, it didn't really cost me much at all. He's like, I'd rather go a day without eating to be able to show you, like, you know, I won't eat tonight. And I was like, no, my God. I'm like, don't do that. But he was like, no, to show you the appreciation. And I remember looking at, I have it to this day, and I remember looking at it, and my name is spelt wrong. And that was the part I loved the most. I get chills just thinking about it. I was like, I don't even remember he doesn't even know me. Like, it was just me looking out, you know, for him. And
right.
trying to help someone and figuring out like, wow, that was cool that how that all worked out. And then to him to do that. And I was just like, I just had it up behind my desk. Like everywhere I went, I always had it up. And mm-hmm. I loved it when people would be like, isn't that spelled wrong? And I would be like, it is. Yeah. Yeah. Just.
I have a good friend of mine, and he flew helicopters in, and he listens to my podcast. So I really apologize if you didn't want me to share your story, but we went to the academy together, and he got out. When he graduated, he went to Fort Rucker, and he went to helicopter school. I went to Keesler, and he flew helicopters for a long time. And I think he flew for the DEA, and he did a variety of different things. But he was in Iraq, right, and Afghanistan, and he was flying the helicopters that rescued the people that got injured. And he was impacted by that, right? By the sights and the sounds and the smells and all the things that wake him up in the middle of the night because he's got PTSD, you know, because of it. And I remember him telling me one day, he said, you know, I see him. You know, here it is 30 years later, and I'm waking up in the middle of the night, and I see these people like they're sitting right next to me. That's so vivid. I can see their faces. I know who they were. And he'll be carrying that with him for the rest of his life. And it's not something that happens to normal people, right, that work at LGT, right? Although, you know, you can get in an accident and have that type of thing happen to you. But for me, Veterans Day is I think about people like him, right? And he didn't give it all, right? He didn't give his life to it, but in a lot of ways he did, right? Because he'll never be the same. He'll never be the person I went to college with. But and that doesn't mean he's bad. It just means he gave a lot of himself in service of his country. So that's what Veterans Day means to me.
I have a lot of respect for veterans, especially the old-timers. I also have a lot of respect for wounded warriors. So that's where my Veterans Day, when if I see someone like an amputee, or you know, you're at a sporting event and you know it's Veterans Day and they're standing up and you can tell, you know, they're either old timers or maybe they're, again, they're disabled in one way or another, that's where I'm like, man, I can't like, I kind of feel like you were saying earlier, where I'm like, oh man, I did nothing. Like this, these people did so much. And like you were mentioning earlier too, like the Medal of Honor, hearing like speeches like that, you know, I've been in some of those too. And just, you know, I remember one in particular where like a couple of younger troops were like, well, let's get back to the office. And I'm like, I will wait in this line as long as I have to shake that guy's hand. Like, I just felt like there's no way I could leave this theater right now and just feel good about myself without shaking his hand and saying like, thank you. And, you know, almost wanted to break down, like just hearing the stories and stuff. So that's where I feel it really is the old timers, and then the people of my generation that gave it all. My hero is Pat Tillman. If you don't know, I always say, if you don't know, you need to look him up. So amazing guy. So, yeah.
Well, Veterans Day is important to me as well. I feel like Mike does about the old timers with the hats. I always see the hats and I want to go and say thank you, but I love hearing their stories. I'll sit down with any of them all day. I don't care. I'll just listen because they need someone to tell their stories too. But for me personally, I don't think of it as I just had a job. It's just my job. I don't think like that. Like you said, it's not something typical that happens to the everyday person. Yes, I chose to go, but some of the choices were made for me also with the different career paths that I had, but it wasn't just a job. I have the pride, like we talked about a little bit ago. I think it was an amazing adventure. That's what I always think it was, like just a journey, an amazing journey. So it means more to me than just, oh, I have a job. I just work for a paycheck. I don't think like that about it, so. Yeah.
Well, that concludes our podcast for today. To all of you listeners out there who are veterans, we want to thank you for your service. And we hope that you feel remembered on this day. And happy Veterans Day.